All right, we are on.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, guys. Welcome to week 5
of coffee, wine
and
true crime.
Wow, we almost had that perfectly.
Wow, we are just so like podcast stars, trendy. Watch
I
out.
Know.
Here we come.
We're really, yeah, here we come. We're coming up in the ranks.
Next, we'll have like a theme song or something.
Ooh, if someone wants to record us a theme song, I'm not musically savvy at all. So if someone wants to do that for us.
I like to sing, but like, it's not a thing.
I mean, if someone wants to do that for us, be our guest. So yeah, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Tall Boy White Claw Mango that I got at Giant earlier. I am off work today, so I did like my adult things because I work Saturday, so I'm off Sunday, Monday, and I did some adult things. I sent a package. I returned my old textbooks from school and like went to the grocery store and I got myself one of these and treated myself. Go treat yourself,
very
people.
Nice.
It's a stressful time. Get yourself a cold drink. It's hot out.
Have you ever squirted some like No. Okay, let me rephrase that.
I'm five.
Have you ever bought like that Mio stuff and like put it in your White Claw?
No. I don't know what Mio is. Like that's the same stuff you put in water, right?
Yeah.
I have like that for, I have a Crystal Light version.
Yeah, like same thing, but put it like in your White Claw.
Oh, I don't, would that make me sick?
No, I've done it. It's pretty good.
Huh. The more you know, you can also cut that out. That's like a little bit of just you and me, but.
No, I do it sometimes. It's pretty good. Adds no calories, so. I gotta get you hip on the pack I have, where it's tangerine, watermelon, mango, and lemon.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. I prefer it regular than like better than like the actual original pack.
Yeah, I just like prefer the tall boys to the smaller cans. I don't know, because like one of these, and then I'm good for like a while.
Yeah, I have like 2 packs of White Claw in the garage.
Oh my gosh!
But I've heard good things about Corona Seltzer. I don't know. I've had like 3 people tell me that.
I've heard bad things about Corona recently, but maybe that's just me.
Maybe we should do a poll on the Twitter, like, what's your favorite alcoholic seltzer water, and see what comes up.
Do it.
All right. The responses will be White Claw, Truly, Bud Light.
Yes.
Corona.
Yes.
And other.
Which, there's others.
Natty Light does one. That's actually not bad. But I don't think you've ever had anything made by Natty Light in your whole entire life.
I need to see like a picture. I don't even know what Natty Light is off the top of my head.
No. Then you probably haven't had it.
No. I'm not a very, I like what I like and I don't like to branch out. Also, I'm just so cheap. Honestly the biggest thing. I'm so cheap that like $2.99 for this White Claw. I was like, okay, you know what? We're going to go out there and really treat ourselves tonight.
Natty Light's like the cheapest beer you can get.
Hmm.
I mean, it's trash, but okay. Natterdays are pretty good. It's like strawberry lemonade beer.
True. All right. So. We should probably get into it.
Yeah.
We've been talking for a while.
You didn't ask what I'm drinking.
Oh, I'm so sorry. How was your week? What are you drinking?
Good. My week was good. I'm drinking a chai tea latte with almond milk from Starbucks.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I went out to Starbucks.
I like the hot chai in the fall and winter.
Yeah, mine's iced. My threshold at school for getting a hot drink was if it was like below freezing.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I was walking outside, so then my hands wouldn't freeze to my drink.
Yeah.
Because I refuse to wear gloves.
That's so bad. I couldn't not wear gloves. Okay. So do we want to introduce, it's your turn. So you're going to go, your case is going to be first.
Yeah. So my state this week, y'all voted. So Jordan and I are doing the top two winners on the Twitter poll. So my state this week's Washington, and I'm doing the tube sock murders, also known as the Mineral Washington murders. So I'm going to go victim by victim, like victim couples.
Okay.
And then talk about possible suspects.
Gotcha.
So on March 1985, Edward Smith and Kimberly Diane Levine drove up to Grant County, Washington on I-90 to explore the scenery and, like, the tourist spots in the area. And somewhere and sometime on this trip, they met their demise.
Okay.
Edward and Kimberly met at the University of Southeastern Massachusetts at Dartmouth. They both graduated in 1984, where they moved to Kent, Washington, and they both worked as accountants. And they were planning on getting married in the following year. So the next day, on March 10th, Edward's body was found in a gravel pit near the Wanapum Dam. His hands were bound behind his back, and he died from his throat being slashed. There was no ID on him, and his wallet was missing. So for a while, they had no, he was just a John Doe. The reason that the police, after a few days, suspected it was Edward was because on Monday, March 11th, both of their employers called the police after they didn't show up for work and weren't answering any calls.
Mm.
As well as 2 weeks later, their car was found abandoned 10 miles away from Edward's body, and the car and body both matched Edward's description given to the police. Mm. So they did a forensic test, and the only evidence they got was a single fingerprint in the car that did not belong to either Kimberly or Edward. They can't find Kimberly's body.
Okay.
So they do a search, can't find her. So 5 months later, in August 1985, Kimberly's remains were found 2 miles away from where Edward's was found.
That's
so
insane.
Yeah.
That's 2 miles away that they didn't, when something happens and it's that close, I always feel like that it, like the body was placed there after it had already been had an immediate search done.
Yeah. What makes this case different than the other two I'm going to talk about is that the police suspect it's the same killer as the other two. However, there's a different MO, which you'll see.
Okay.
The same month that Kimberly's remains were found in August 1985, 27-year-old Stephen Harkins and his 42-year-old girlfriend, Ruth Cooper, they went to Tule Lake in Pierce County, Washington for a weekend camping trip. It's around the same area. They were up camping around Mineral, Washington, as all these victims were. So they both lived in Tacoma, Washington, and they were employees at a vocational school. Their plan was to go camping for the weekend and be home by Sunday evening so they could go to work the next day. However, they didn't show up for work Monday morning and were reported missing. 4 days later, on August 14th, 1985, hikers found Stephen's body. He was still in his sleeping bag and killed by a single gunshot to the head. So police speculated that he was sleeping when he was killed.
Okay.
Like the first murders, police could not locate Ruth, and they found her 2 months later in October 1985. When they found her, all that's left was her purse, dismembered skull, and skeletal remains, and there was a tube sock wrapped around her neck, hence the tube sock murders.
Oh.
They found out it was her through dental records.
Jeez.
So despite there's a tube sock being wrapped around her neck, and the first instinct of police was that she was strangled to death, she was actually killed by a gunshot to her abdomen. At this point, law enforcement thinks that the murders might be connected to the murders of Kim and Ed. And the murders became big news because it was publicized by Crime Stoppers.
Okay.
So it just went from, you know, to murders in the woods to being, like, big news in Washington. The last set of victims were 36-year-old Mike Ramir and his 21-year-old girlfriend, Diana Robertson. So on December 12th, 1985, Ramir, Mike, and Diana and their 2-year-old daughter, Crystal, went camping in Pierce County, Washington. They were from Tacoma, and one reason they were going camping up there is because Mike was a trap hunter, and he was looking, he was checking in on some traps he set earlier in the year. And they were also up there looking for a Christmas tree to chop down.
Oh, it's like a wholesome family day. Just,
oh no, it's gonna get, yeah, it's destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not quite the wholesome family you think.
Oh.
So later that day, Crystal was found walking around a Kmart in Spanaway, Washington, which is 30 miles north of where they went camping. The employees were unable to locate her parents in the store, and they called the police. Crystal was placed in temporary foster care, and the police said she was a missing child, so her picture went up everywhere. And a few days later, her grandma recognized her and got guardianship. Mm-hmm. So when her grandma asked, like, where her parents were, she just said mommy was in the trees.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
There really wasn't any investigation over where Mike and Diana were. I think they just kind of assumed that they abandoned Crystal. Mm-hmm. So 2 months later, in February, Diana's body was found deep in the forest near Mineral, Washington. She had been stabbed 17 times and had a tube sock tied around her neck.
Oh, my God.
So her body was found near Mike's pickup truck, and there was bloodstains in the car and a note that said, "I love you, Diana," that Diana's mom claimed was in Mike's handwriting. However, a handwriting expert could not back up that claim.
Okay.
So the police brought bloodhounds in to try to see if they could follow the scent of a suspect or Mike or anything, and it just, there was none. It was February up in northern Washington. There's like bunches of, there's a bunch of snow on the ground. So I don't know anything about bloodhounds, but I wonder if that had something to play with it.
I would imagine that it does.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not a crazy conclusion.
That they can't follow the scent because there's like a foot of snow on the ground.
Yeah, or ice or something like that.
Exactly.
Because heat like enhances, like humidity smells stick stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know if they just couldn't. I know there was a bunch of snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't find anything and the case went totally cold.
Got it.
So now for suspects. So for decades, they thought Mike Grimier was the one who did it.
Yeah.
He was the prime suspect for Diana's murders, and because of the tube sock connection, law enforcement also thought he could have murdered Stephen and Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just tied the first victims, Kimberly and Edward, in because of the connection to the proximity, and the bodies were separated as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike had a history of domestic violence and had physically abused Diana in the past, and also had been arrested in October 1985. So the idea that he might have just ran off and living off the grid wasn't too far off of an idea, because he worked as a roofer and was an animal trapper, so he knew how to live off the grid if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So the police theorized that he killed Diana, dropped Crystal off at the Kmart, and fled.
Wow.
Until 2011, they weren't able to find anything. Like, they weren't able to locate him. However, in 2011, two hikers found his skull a mile away from where Diana's body was.
Oh,
and the cause of death never had been determined. However, they ruled out a gunshot wound to the head.
Wow.
So, I mean, he still could have been the one who did it, but they don't know because...
Yeah, but then that saying that, like, ruling out the gunshot wound to the head kind of rules out the whole theory of, like, killing his wife and then killing himself because he killed his wife. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's other...
where that happens.
There's other ways, you mean, to kill yourself. You don't have to shoot yourself in the head, though.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, like, that's at least one thing that can get out from. Because there's not much you can do with a skull.
Just a skull. Exactly. And it was only, like, half his skull, too. It wasn't even.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was, like, 25 years later or so. So it's, like, and it's been weathering.
And if it's in Washington State, like, that's...
Rain, snow for 25 years. Yeah. They're not going to get much off of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Another theory for a suspect is Billy Ray Ballard Jr. In 1985, he was serving time in Wyoming State Penitentiary for abducting and raping two women. And I think this is like just when fingerprint databases were starting to go over state lines.
Mm-hmm.
So His fingerprint came up as matching the one that was found in the first murder victims, Ed and Kimberly's car.
Ooh.
So he pled guilty to the murders, to Ed and Kimberly's murder, to avoid the death penalty. There was thought that he could be connected to the other murders. However, he didn't confess to those, and the MO was different.
Mm-hmm.
So the last one, the last theory is that there's an unidentified serial killer. People online and the law enforcement have said that this is probably the most common theory and probably the most likely.
Yeah.
The murders were committed in a close time span, within a few months, and they were close to each other, and they all had a specific MO if you don't count Kimberly and Ed's murder as part of the serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
The specific MO was the tube sock around the female's neck and then being disposed away from the male. But, however, there is no solid leads because there was no forensic evidence, and the case remains unsolved. I mean, with these happening in the mid-80s, if it wasn't an unidentified killer, that the guy could still be out there, could still be alive.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, was there any, like, sexual assault involved?
No.
So they don't have any DNA from that?
Yeah, there's no forensics.
Ugh. That's so frustrating.
Yeah, so, I mean, my guess is it's an unidentified killer.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you there.
All right, so...
But the first one, for sure, I don't think was connected.
No, I don't think so either. And the only reason I mentioned it is because, I mean, it happened around the same time. And the part of the MO was the same with the bodies being separated.
Yeah, on the outside, it looked...
But I don't think they're connected, considering they have the guy who supposedly did it.
Yeah, and he confessed to it.
So I think it's an unidentified killer, and sadly, because there's no forensics on this, they won't be able to get him. Like, you know how the new thing is, the cops killers by using DNA matches from, like,
Ancestry,
23andMe, like they did for Golden State.
Yeah. They can't do that here,
so. Mm-hmm. So my sources were truecrimearticles.com, Wikipedia, The Spokesman Review, Seattle Times, The Dispatch, Spokane Chronicle, and POMC.com.
So wonderful.
That's that.
I'm gonna take one last sip of my drink and then get going. So I know we've been doing the whole states thing, but mine doesn't really have a state.
It has
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 states. But Tennessee is the first one. And I think there's probably the most surrounding Tennessee. So we're just going to claim that it's Tennessee. So this week I'm covering the Redhead Murders, which is a series of unsolved murders of redheaded females between October 1978 and 1992, believed to be committed by an unknown male serial killer. So as I mentioned before, they were in states including Tennessee, Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. Almost all the victims were connected because they had some type of reddish hair. So like auburn, reddish brown, reddish blonde, like varying, all different kinds of hair that kind of, if you had a red tint, it was implied that it was connected. So this case is unsolved. And victims range from 6 to 11. There's a few confirmed, and then there's a few that are suspected. So I'll start by getting into the victims. So the first victim was Lisa Nichols. I apologize if I mispronounced that. Her body was discovered on September 16th, 1984. She was 28 years old. She also used the last name Jarvis, and she was found along Interstate 40 near West Memphis, Arkansas. She was wearing only a sweater, and she was a resident of West Virginia. Authorities were not able to contact her family. because she was estranged from her family, which is a pattern that we'll see in all these victims. So because even though her body was discovered in late 1984, she wasn't identified until June 1985. Mm-hmm. And she was identified through fingerprints.
So all the victims had a more transient.
Yeah, and I'll get into that because that'll like become a bigger aspect of the case later on. So then she was the one who like was first connected to the idea of like redhead murders because of her like strawberry blondish hair. Mm-hmm. And then she was also identified by a couple from Florida who allowed her to stay with them for a little bit. And they said that like one of the last times they saw her, she was leaving a truck stop along a highway and may have attempted to hitchhike. So again, that hitchhiking transient kind of lifestyle, mm-hmm. which was quite popular back then.
Yeah.
The second victim is Tina Farmer. Her body was found on January 1st, 1985 in Jellico, Tennessee in Campbell County, down an embankment of the southbound side of Interstate 75. The remains were in an advanced state of decomposition, and she was killed approximately 72 hours before. She was killed by strangulation. She was white and had shoulder-length curly red hair. She was estimated to be between 17 and 25 years old, but could possibly be as old as 30.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I don't understand. I guess I don't even know. I don't know how they did that.
That's like a big difference because, like, I know your bones change in your 20s, I think.
Yeah. It was also in 85 and it was an advanced state of decomposition. So I can see how they did that as kind of just like a margin of error. Mm-hmm. She was found clothed with a tan pullover, a shirt and jeans. She had been wrapped in a blanket, and then they actually found DNA evidence of bodily fluid on it. And then they also found out that she was actually 10 to 12 weeks pregnant when she died.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. She actually wasn't identified until September 6, 2018, when the Shelby County Sheriff's Office announced that the victim had been identified by fingerprint as Tina Marie McKinney Farmer of Indiana. She was 21 or 22 at the time of her death, so not even close to 30.
And was Why did it take them so long? Just for, like, they all probably had their fingerprints on file.
Yeah, and the fact that they had, I don't understand why it took, well, because she was last seen in Indianapolis, Indiana, accompanied by a trucker said to be headed to Kentucky. So she probably, I think it's because they didn't share fingerprints across state lines like that yet.
Okay.
And, like, now in modern times, like.
There's one big national database, I think.
Now there is, yeah. So I think somebody just, like, remembered, went back, checked it, and found something. Okay. Which they should have been looking, there should be more people looking at cold cases and unsolved cases with the technology we have now, but that's a personal opinion, so I rest my case. So in 2019, the DNA evidence from the bodily fluid that was found identified convicted kidnapper Jerry Leon Johns as the man that killed her in December 1984. He died in prison in 2015.
Damn it.
And he was previously convicted in 1987 of aggravated kidnapping, assault, and other crimes in attacks on a woman.
Okay, so he definitely has the MO to be the guy who did all of them.
Oh, yeah. And the crime that he was convicted for was of the attack of a woman named Nina Shockey. And she survived the attack after she was bound, strangled, and dumped along I-40. And her testimony put him behind bars, basically. And then, similar to Farmer, this woman had been choked with a piece of cloth ripped from her shirt, bound, and then left for dead inside a storage drain. I don't know if you can hear that. It's raining outside here.
Is it?
For me, it is.
Yeah, it probably is here, too.
Yeah. Well, that might have just been a quick sprinkle that came through. It just surprised me. It's very hot today, too, by the way.
I went outside, aka just to go get Starbucks, and I just almost did not make it to my car.
Yeah, I went and ran a few errands, and like I melted. So this girl testified, because her doing that put him behind bars originally, so then that got all his stuff in the mm-hmm. database to where they found him, and they had her testimony to link to Tina Farmer's murder because they were so similar.
But they only linked him to one.
Yes.
Okay.
And then on December 18th, 2019, a grand jury in Campbell County, Tennessee, ruled that he would have been indicted for murder in Farmer's death if he was still alive. Her family has at least that level of justice, as much as they can have now.
Yeah.
So the next victim has not been identified, but on April 3rd, 1985, skeletonized partial remains of a young girl were discovered about 200 yards near Big Wheel Gap Road, 4 miles southwest of Jellicoe, Tennessee, in Campbell County near Strip Mine. So the same area as the Tina Farmer case. She is believed to have been dead between 1 and 4 years. Her age was estimated between 9 and 15. She was found by a passerby. The cause of death is undetermined, which does not rule out homicide. 32 bones, including her skull, were discovered. And her skull was... they found enough of her skull to try to do a facial reconstruction attempt. And then they found items like a necklace and a bracelet nearby, as well as some boots and a few scraps of clothing. Things that may or may not have belonged to her, but give a better idea of like what she might have had on her.
Yeah.
And then there are just other similarities between this victim and then Tina Farmer and the survivor, Linda Shockey, from before, with having the knot in a cloth found in a piece of material tied around the neck of the victim. And then recent forensic analysis of the victim remains indicated she was not native to the area where she was discovered. The test showed she was likely born in like the Florida or Central Texas area and then later lived in the Midwest, potentially Rocky Mountain states or the Southwest or Pacific Coast. But she
hasn't. Okay, so she was far away from home. Yeah.
It has yet to be identified, unfortunately. So on March 31st, this is the next victim now, the fourth, I believe. On March 31st, 1985, the skeletonized body of a red-haired female was found in Pleasant View, Cheatham County, Tennessee. She was believed to have died between 3 and 5 months previously due to an unknown cause. But her case is linked to the redhead murders because she was found at the side of Interstate 24 in Cheatham, Tennessee, which I said earlier. She was clothed. She had a shirt, sweater, pants, and underwear on. When they looked at the dental records, they found that she had evidence of crowning and overlapping teeth in her mouth. So they believed that she, and from this, they concluded that she was between 31 and 40 at the time of her death. So quite older in comparison to the other victims, but still, again, on a big interstate like that. And the last confirmed, or at least like more solid victim in this case, S.B. Pilgrim. So she has been identified. Her body was discovered on April 1st, 1985 in a large white Admiral fridge, basically, on the side of the road in Gray, Knox County, Kentucky.
Okay.
Along Route 25. Her death was by suffocation. The victim had been dead for a few days and was nude except for a distinctive necklace that had two pieces on it. And two pairs of socks, one white and then one with green and yellow stripes. There were reports that the victim may have been soliciting a ride to North Carolina over CB radio, which is, I believe, the...
just like trucker radio, I think, right?
Yeah, like short-distance trucker radios. 500 people attended her funeral, which was televised, because the town of Gray was quite quiet, so they were really surprised that this happened, and they created refrigerator decals with the word Superwoman on it. And then they also looked further at her body and found scars that revealed that she had a child previously. Her eyes were light, her hair was red, it was nearly a foot long, which fit the previous pattern, and she was determined to be between 24 and 35 years old. And she was only approximately 4'9" or 4'11" tall.
Oh, dang.
Not very tall at all. And several missing persons had been eliminated in the process of finding matches. After the case was publicized in January 2013, the police received tips, but nothing was solidified. And finally, in October 1st, 2018, the Knox County Sheriff's Office announced this woman had been positively identified as S.B. Regina Black Pilgrim of Western North Carolina. A DNA match.
Oh, keep going.
Was made between her and her grown daughter, who said her mother disappeared when the girl was 6 weeks old. Pilgrim also had 4 older children.
Why the hell did it take them so many years to publicize the case?
I don't know. We'll have to, like, I'm not even like done yet, so we'll have to like dive into it. There's a lot of this that I'm just like, why? You know, just there's a lack of like interstate conversations going on and information not being shared where this could
have resolved a lot. I'm just going to blame it on the fact that a lot of these police forces were probably a lot smaller and didn't have any experience with murder cases.
Yeah, like small towns and just places where we'll get into it later on. And then just a small note, there was an unidentified victim from West Virginia that was discovered in 1983. And people thought she was a mannequin. And yeah, and she was estimated to be between 35 and 45 years old. So again, on the older side of the age range that we're looking at. But she seemed to have like a better attention to grooming than the others. But they haven't, a lot of West Virginia authorities are skeptical about whether or not this was related. I think the biggest thing is just because it was found along a big interstate and she probably had like slightly reddish hair. And then the second potential victim, but not like confirmed, was Elizabeth Lamote. She was discovered on April 14th, 1985 in Greene County, Tennessee. She was determined to be killed by blunt force trauma and possibly a stab wound. Police were able to obtain fingerprints and DNA and dental information. And she had been approximately 6 to 8 weeks pregnant shortly before she died, but had miscarried before death. So then eventually they were able, she also had light brown to blonde hair with red highlights. So she wasn't identified until November 2018, yet again, and she was a New Hampshire native. She was 17 at the time of her death. She was identified through a DNA match after a DNA profile was obtained from Lamott's family by New Hampshire police in 2017.
The hell?
She had been staying at a group home in Manchester, New Hampshire, and never returned to her family after gaining furlough, which is really sad. So moving into the investigation, there's no solid suspects. The FBI does, you know, have this case because it is through a lot of interstates. There's been a few other cases throughout the years, such as one nicknamed the Buckskin Girl, which was later identified to be Marcia King, who people thought could have been connected but have been proven not to be. Most people think that Jerry Leon Johns, the man who attacked Tina Farmer and Linda Shockey. I just couldn't remember her first name. I knew her last name was Shockey. But he's obviously passed away now. So
what year was he convicted?
Let me see. I have to go back and put my notes. It doesn't say when he attacked the other woman.
Oh, because I was going to say that there's a possibility he was in jail.
Yeah, which I could see too. So then people considered that it could be him. But then because he died in prison, they weren't able to really talk to him more, try to get any more information out of him. And then another suspect was a 32-year-old trucker in Pennsylvania.
I was going to say it sounds like a trucker.
Yeah.
Especially with them being disposed of on big highways.
Exactly. Who was questioned by police, but then nothing was found. So last, I guess, most interesting note. In 2018, students enrolled in a sociology class, Elizabethton High School in Tennessee, studied the case with their teacher. The class coined the name the Bible Belt Strangler, developed the information from an FBI profiler. They came up with this following profile. The subject is a white male born between 1936 and 1962, which means he would have been between 23 and 49 at the time of the crimes. He was likely a commercial trucker frequenting Interstate 40. They estimated his height to be between 5'9 and 6'2, and that he weighed 100 to 270 pounds. And his work was likely based in or near the city of Knoxville, Tennessee. And that is it for the big chunk of it. Thank you, Wikipedia, allthat'sinteresting.com, and yes, even Reddit, which I'm not proud of.
It's not a
scholarly source, but here's the thing about Reddit. I'm going to get into it, though, even more, because I have some opinions on this case, and I'm just going to share it with you all, because here's my thing. I'm going to be real with you guys. I think that this case had quite a bit of fuck-ups, in my opinion.
Oh, hell yeah.
They got this idea, whoever was like, oh, all of these women have slightly red hair, coined this idea. It could have been a journalist, and I'm not saying it was just the police, but like they come up with this idea, and then all of a sudden that's like the big thing. It's like, oh, the redhead murderer is a serial killer. No, there are so many truckers and so many like so the culture of the 80s was like hitchhiking and walking and being transient and running away and like not being at home. Like that's so common that we know of in the true crime world that I just think it's so ignorant to like, to just like clump it all together and be like, oh, it has to be one person. Like, no, there's so many people. It probably, unfortunately, it was numerous truckers that did this, these acts and got away with it. Like a lot of them are just so different. Like, sure.
I mean, like, there's no MOs the same, but minus the hair color.
Which is just such like a distinctly like bright red hair. Like it was like varying kinds of red.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I don't know. I just think it gets blown up so much because like, it's like a catchy, niche nickname like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't actually do anything.
Plus all the police fuckups. I mean, they didn't get most of the stuff until 2018-ish.
Exactly.
And like by the time that happens, it's likely that whoever committed it is dead. There's no forensics because they probably got ruined. And yeah, just, I don't know, just a lot of fuck ups, I think. I think they could have probably solved it if they tried to identify the victims and find another pattern better than just the hair color.
Yeah, and like broaden their search more.
Yeah.
And just, it's just weird. I think that they got so like tunnel visioned on it. The real, if there was connected and if there was like a pattern of it, then that person was able to slip away.
Yeah.
Because they were like, I don't know, like go undercover, hang out at truck stops, like go be in that environment and see how those people interact, understand like the lingo, the culture, like what people are doing. So then you can get a better idea of how that would actually happen. So then you could find somebody faster. I don't know. I'm going.
Yeah. On. But can we also talk about how cool that high school class is?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's,
I want to take a class like that.
That's something I would have taken.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get those cool kind of classes.
Yeah, seriously. Sorry.
I'm kind of jealous. It's okay. We did it. Yay. Week 5 in the books.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, as always, you can follow us on Twitter at CW. Wait, no. Yeah.
CWATC podcast.
On Twitter.
Yes.
And Coffee, Wine, and True Crime podcast on Instagram. And if you have a case you want us to hear talk about on air, or if you have something, a crazy case that you just want to write to us about, we'll
or
read
questions.
It. Or questions. Want to talk, whatever.
Yeah,
shoot us a DM. You. Shoot us an email at coffeewineandtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you have an interesting story from like something that happened to you or one of your family members or in your town, we'll read it.
Yes.
We'll read it on air. So definitely shoot those to us. Mm-hmm. As always, keep a lookout on Twitter for the polls because we'll do what you guys want.
Yeah.
It makes our lives easier if you
so
tell us
easier.
What cases you want us to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So just, oh, and keep a lookout for the poll on which is the best hard seltzer.
Oh, yes. For sure.
All right.
Guys.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Bye.